It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Sierra Leone says it expects a spike in Ebola cases during a nationwide curfew. The Gates Foundation donates $50 million to combat the deadly virus. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Sierra Leone Wednesday said it expects to uncover up to 20% more Ebola victims when it imposes a nationwide curfew beginning September 19, lasting 72 hours, in a bid to break the chain of transmission. It will be an effort to locate those who have died of the virus and those who need to be hospitalized. The country has suffered 500 fatalities from Ebola and 1,400 confirmed cases. Meanwhile, Sierra Leone's finance minister, Kafala Mara, told reporters Wednesday the Ebola virus has devastated the economy, with growth projections back to single digits for the first time since a mining boom back in 2011. He said growth has been hindered by closed businesses and airline service disruptions. The United States Wednesday announces donating 5 ambulances to Sierra Leone to help cope with the epidemic. Kathleen Fitzgibbon is the U.S. Chargé d'Affaires in Freetown.
The government made the request, and our government decided this is an emergency. It's not a peace or conflict situation, but it is something very important to donate to. So that's why we found that we had these ambulances that we could take from another mission and bring and donate here. We got the request and we were happy to be able to answer.
She handed the keys of the vehicles over to Ernest Bai Koroma, the Sierra Leone president. The World Health Organization says nearly 2,300 people have died of the disease in West Africa since February. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says it's committing $50 million to combat the outbreak. It will give funds to the UN and international aid agencies to purchase supplies and support emergency operations in affected countries. This is VOA News. The United Nations on Tuesday allocated nearly $4 million for UN humanitarian air service to help move aid, supplies, equipment, and personnel to Ebola-struck countries in Africa. Reduced commercial travel to the region has hampered humanitarian operations. China is sending hundreds of troops to join the UN peacekeeping force in war-torn South Sudan, where Chinese companies have major oil interests. A foreign ministry spokeswoman said Wednesday China's goal is strictly to follow the mandate of the UN Security Council and promote construction of the region. Mark Walls is a China analyst at the University of Wyoming and a retired ambassador to Chad.
They're now, surprisingly, one of the major contributors of boots on the ground to UN peacekeeping exercises. It may not be as new as it might sound. It, you know, reflects their kind of growing interest in Africa and their exposure to some of the untidier, the more violent parts of the world where they do have some interests. But it has been in the works now for the last 2 years at least.
China has already deployed 1,800 peacekeepers to South Sudan. The Wall Street Journal says China's National Petroleum Corporation holds a 40% stake in a joint venture that operates South Sudanese oil fields and also operates a 1,000-kilometer oil export pipeline that ships crude through neighboring Sudan. The International Committee of the Red Cross warns hundreds of thousands in South Sudan face starvation, where conflict has displaced more than 1 million people. Lisa Schlein reports.
The ICRC's head of operations for East Africa, Eric Markley, says the organization needs an extra $19 million to make sure these South Sudanese do not starve.
Basically, to ensure their survival for 150,000 people that will be served. We have forecasted that they will not be able to be self-sustainable in the months to come. We want to make sure that these ones at least will not die of malnutrition.
The UN Children's Fund reports nearly 250,000 children are suffering severe acute malnutrition. The agency warns as many as 50,000 children are at risk of death if they do not receive appropriate treatment. The rainy season, which is due to last until the end of the year, and lack of security are hampering the ICRC's ability to deliver food by airplane or road.
That's Lisa Schlein in Geneva. The French press agency reports thousands turned out to remember 3 Italian nuns raped and murdered earlier this week in Burundi. Among the mourners, Vice President Prosper Bazombanza, who said the government was appalled by the barbarity of the attack. Police have a suspect in custody who they say confessed to the crime. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Barack Obama outlines plans to take on the ISIS terrorist group.
ISIL poses a threat to the people of Iraq and Syria and the broader Middle East, including American citizens, personnel, and facilities. If left unchecked, these terrorists could pose a growing threat beyond that region, including to the United States.
An African Union official sees hope for peace in Sudan. Infighting in President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party gets entrenched. Africa's food shortages are blamed on poor soil. And a Nigerian group demands a speedy inquiry into alleged Boko Haram sponsors.
We are a nation that has for long abandoned an important element of democracy, which is ensuring that the institutions of democracy are held accountable by the citizens.
Emma Shehu is a leading member of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign in Nigeria, and the ozone layer is on the road to recovery. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Barack Obama has described for the first time a four-part strategy for the United States and its allies to combat Islamic State militants. Speaking to the American people Wednesday night, he said the strategy may include actions in Syria in addition to ongoing efforts in Iraq.
ISIL poses a threat to the people of Iraq and Syria and the broader Middle East, including American citizens, personnel, and facilities. If left unchecked, these terrorists could pose a growing threat beyond that region, including to the United States. So tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place, and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat. Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy. First, we will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense. Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
Mr. Obama assured Americans that the effort against ISIS will be different from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
But I want the American people to understand how this effort will be different from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It will not involve American combat troops fighting on foreign soil. This counterterrorism campaign will be waged through a steady, relentless effort to take out ISIL wherever they exist using our air power and our support for partners' forces on the ground. This strategy of taking out terrorists who threaten us while supporting partners on the front lines is one that we have successfully pursued in Yemen and Somalia for years, and it is consistent with the approach I outlined earlier this year, to use force against anyone who threatens America's core interests, but to mobilize partners wherever possible to address broader challenges to international order.
The president also called on Congress to provide additional funding for the effort against ISIS. A leading member of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign in Nigeria has called on President Goodluck Jonathan's government to expedite investigations into reports that the country's central bank was allegedly used by sponsors of the Islamist group Boko Haram to fund the group's violence. Emma Shehu tells reporter Peter Clotty that the government should investigate and prosecute those implicated in sponsoring Boko Haram militants.
This whole advocacy is anchored on accountability. We are a nation that has for long abandoned an important element of democracy, which is ensuring that the institutions of democracy are held accountable by the citizens. And therefore, when the so-called negotiator for the federal government, Stephen Davis, made the revelation a couple of days ago that he has information from Boko Haram that certain high-profile Nigerians are sponsors of Boko Haram, we issued a press statement asking the federal government to verify the allegations that have been raised by Mr. Davis. And this too should be investigated, and if it is found that they are implicated, then they should be brought to justice.
The government has categorically denied ever hiring this person named David to negotiate on his behalf with Boko Haram. So don't you think that the premise itself is false?
I think government is not being sincere, because on May 4th, this Daily's paper, which is owned by somebody who is very close to the administration, Ndukayo Begbena, published a major story of four negotiators that have been appointed by the government, including Stephen Davis. The government never, from May 4th until Stephen Davis made this statement, never denied the existence of negotiators working for them. Even when the president went to the United States of America on the invitation of Obama for the Africa Summit, he did an interview with the Washington Times in which he said Nigeria has negotiators, even though he failed to mention the negotiators.
But if I may ask you, if he said the government has negotiators and he did not name the specific negotiators, and the government is now coming out to categorically deny hiring that specific one, Mr. David, from negotiating on its behalf, then you cannot directly link the government to it, can you?
No, we can link the government, because you can see that the government has its back to the wall. That's why it's reacting now.
But the government said it is investigating the allegations made by the alleged negotiator.
No, but the government is contradicting itself. The Department of State Security said it was going to investigate Ademola Sharif. It's the same arm of government that said that. It's fond of not being accountable, and that's why it always shoots itself in the foot.
All these supporters of the government say are politically motivated, especially when the government has been making effort, they say, in trying to resolve this problem that is affecting everybody irrespective of political affiliation.
What it has been saying all along is on top of the situation, and territory is falling to Boko Haram, and they are still saying territory is not captured by Boko Haram, and then they turn around, they say they have recaptured. Can't you see the contradiction? You don't recapture something that has not been captured.
Emma Shehu is a leading member of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign in Nigeria. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Sudan's Minister of Information says his country is ready for peace in the country following the signing of an African Union mediator agreement with the Sudanese Revolutionary Front. Former South African President Thabo Mbeki and chairman of the African Union High Implementation Panel said the agreement signed last week in Addis Ababa is a big step in Sudan's national dialogue. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says all political detainees will be released and basic freedoms guaranteed.
Actually, we have here the National Dialogue Committee. We send from our side our document, which we have read about the National Dialogue Roadmap. And they went there to meet the opposition in Addis Ababa, those who are carrying guns, armed opposition. In the presence of Thabo Mbeki, the former president of South Africa. And we succeeded to reach an agreement with them, and we signed that. In fact, it is simple, and it is straight away and confining with what we have reached in Khartoum. They ask for improvement of the environment, political environment, make it conducive for the dialogue. And the major point, actually, is that the freedom for those who are now detained, and there are few, actually. We don't say that they're politically detained, but with accusations.
So, Mr. Minister, let me ask you, because, as you said, one sticking point is your government's continued arrest of the opposition people, including Sadiq al-Mahdi and his daughter. So, are you saying there is not going to be any more arrests?
In fact, actually, we didn't arrest them because they're practicing political activity or something. But they went beyond, the red line for accusation of the army and attacking the army. And this is the national security level which is not permitted for everybody to talk about this, and this can lead to some sort of instability in the country. That's why he has been arrested, and after they have, in some way or another, they made an apology from their party and the respect to the army, they have been released. And now, Mariam Assad also, the same thing. According to accusation of making some steps to open up the regime and this thing. But if they are moving peacefully and they are calling or they are arranging themselves or they want to place themselves as a party and peacefully, nobody will arrest anybody.
So what about press censorship? Are you telling me, Mr. Minister, that your government...
There will be no censorship. There will be no censorship. This is I'm declaring the day before yesterday. There will be no censorship on the newspapers. And they have already know that. And we have free newspaper now in Sudan. New media. Free media.
This national dialogue, so when will it begin and what fashion will it take?
We said actually from 1 month to maximum 3 months. And after this step, I think we will have another round with Thabo Mbeki and the outside of opposition. And then we will decide together when we can start.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 11th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The factionalism that has gripped President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party has become so entrenched that some members are now calling for the suspension of the government's five-year economic blueprint known as the Zimbabwe Agenda for Social and Economic Transformation. Zimbabwe Herald editor Sisa Zvayi says the fight over President Mugabe's blueprint is now visible in the party as factions wrestle for positions ahead of the December elective Congress.
I think it is a realization of the different factions in ZANU to understand, to appreciate, and to locate where state power is. State power and the power in ZANU still resides in President Robert Mugabe. So he who wants to remain politically relevant under the leadership and control of the party and the country under President Robert Mugabe must play the tune. They must play the song, and the song in town is to elevate the first lady to the position of secretary for the Women's League of ZANU. And anyone who does not show that, anyone who does not respect that, who does not endorse that, who does not bootleg the first lady, as long as President Robert Mugabe is in charge, they may lose their political position as the party head for Congress. So it's a realization that the old man is in charge of both the party and the country. And those who will not sing the song, who will be forced to leave the church called ZANU to some other political home outside of ZANU and the state.
There is speculation that a faction in ZANU-PF might actually be planning to install Grace Mugabe as leader of ZANU-PF when Mr. Mugabe is gone. How feasible is that?
That is a very misleading proposition. That is a very uninformed position because Mugabe is in charge. Not only of the party, but also of the government. And it's repressive state apparatuses, which includes the central intelligence, the army, the police, and all those sections that the coercive elements of the state. So to suggest that Mugabe does not have teeth is misleading, and those who believe that will surely be looking for a political home outside of them.
Zimbabwe Herald editor Cesar Zvaye was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. A new report by the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa says that while farmers in many parts of the world regularly harvest up to 5 tons of maize per hectare, those in Africa harvest just 1 ton on average. Outdated farming practices combined with inherently low soil fertility has been blamed for the low yields. Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Many countries in Africa often face food shortages as farmers struggle to grow enough produce for the entire population. A new report published by Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa shows poor farming practices has led to poor soil fertility. The analysis found many farmers have failed to rotate crops and apply organic fertilizers. It says there is also a problem of persistent soil erosion. Agra Soil Health Program Coordinator Abed Kiwia says the organization is trying to promote basic farming principles in order to improve soil fertility and produce more food.
Like, for example, you weed your crops in good time, you do the right spacing, and then you also do soil and water conservation. You have terraces along your farm so as to control soil erosion, you control loss of nutrients. So it's a package where we are integrating enough of what we call best bet agronomic practices.
So far, Agra Soil Program has trained 3 million farmers in 13 African countries in an approach to growing crops dubbed integrated soil fertility management. Kiwia says the approach involves mixing in organic matter to the crops.
Here we are telling them use fertilizers, and because we know fertilizers in Africa they are expensive, we are telling them integrate them with organic input which are found locally, like for example farmyard manure, green manure. There are also agroforestry trees which are very good in providing organic nutrients.
But soil scientists in Africa are not getting the same result as their counterparts in Asia. Soil researchers say part of the problem is that in most areas the soil has rocks, giving it low fertility. Dr. Keith Shepherd is a principal scientist at the World Agroforestry Center. He says there is need to determine the nutrients that are missing in the soil.
There's a need to very carefully target, you know, which fertilizers are appropriate where. And this needs soil and plant testing to diagnose, you know, what are the limiting nutrients. And we're faced with an extremely variable situation in smallholder farming systems in Africa. Even within the same farm, we have, you know, very different patches of good and poor soil as a result of past management.
Agricultural experts say, despite the obstacle, soil fertility can be improved, and if proper steps are taken, there should be no need for African countries to import food. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The World Meteorological Organization reports that the Earth's protective ozone layer is on track to recovery by the middle of the century. The agency says the so-called Montreal Protocol, which calls for the phase-out of ozone-depleting substances, is working. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The World Meteorological Organization calls the 1987 Montreal Protocol a great success. This news comes as a welcome antidote to the recent bleak assessment by the same agency that the concentration of greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere reached record levels last year. WMO Senior Scientific Officer Guy Bratton says a lot has changed for the better since the agency issued its last scientific assessment of ozone depletion 4 years ago.
Now, for the first time in this report, we said that we see indications of a small increase in total ozone. So that means that recovery of the ozone layer in terms of total ozone has just started. If you go more specifically at the higher level, up at 40 kilometers in the stratosphere, high above the ground, there one sees a clear increase in ozone in recent years.
Bratton says this is a sign that the amount of ozone-depleting gases is going down and the ozone is on the way up again. The stratospheric ozone layer is a fragile shield of gas that protects the Earth from harmful ultraviolet rays of the sun. The UN Environment Program says the Montreal Protocol will have prevented 2 million cases of skin cancer annually by 2030, averted damage to human eyes and immune systems, and protected wildlife and agriculture. The treaty calls for the phase-out of ozone-depleting substances such as chlorofluorocarbons and halons, which were once used in products such as refrigerators, spray cans, insulation foam, and fire suppression. The report finds the phase-out of ozone-depleting substances has had a positive spin-off for the global climate, because many of these substances also are potent greenhouse gases. But the report cautions that certain substitutes are themselves potent greenhouse gases that potentially could undermine these gains. Bratton says new replacement compounds called hydrofluorocarbons do not harm the ozone layer, but many are potent greenhouse gases. But the good news, says Broughton, is compounds are available that have much lower greenhouse warming effects. He says the ozone layer is expected to recover to 1980 benchmark levels. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the 2015 Orange African Cup of Nations qualifiers. Cameroon's indomitable Lions were in scintillating form when they clawed the Elephants of Ivory Coast 4-1 in Yaoundé on Wednesday, while the Democratic Republic of Congo beat Sierra Leone 2-0 in Lubumbashi. In the other Group D fixture, Cameroon lead the group with 6 points. The Congolese edge Ivory Coast on goal average to place second, while Sierra Leone is at the bottom of the table. In Group A, Republic of Congo beat visitors Sudan 2-0 in Pointe Noire, as African champions Nigeria and host South Africa play to a scoreless draw in Cape Town. Consequently, the Congolese top the group with maximum 6 points. South Africa is second ahead of Nigeria, then come Sudan. Meanwhile, hosts Algeria consolidated their lead in Group B with a 1-0 win over Mali in Blida, while Malawi pipped visitors Ethiopia 3-2 in Blantyre. Algeria has 6 points. Mali edge Malawi on goal difference to claim second spot, while Ethiopia is at the bottom of the table. In Group C, Burkina Faso outclassed their Angolan hosts 3-0 in Luanda as Gabon held Lesotho to a 1-1 draw in Maseru. Burkina Faso lead the group with 6 points. Gabon is second, Lesotho is third, followed by Angola. Elsewhere, Cape Verde Islands beat Zambia 2-0 in Praia as Mozambique and Niger drew 1-1 in Maputo. Cape Verde topped the group with 6 points. Mozambique is second, followed by Niger, then Zambia. In Group E, Uganda beat Guinea 2-0. In Kampala, as Ghana edged Togo 3-2 in Lome. Uganda edged Ghana on goal average to top the group with 4 points. Guinea is third ahead of Togo. Meanwhile, the resurgent Senegal Lions of Teranga continue their winning form with a 2-0 triumph over hosts Botswana and Gaborone, while Egypt's woes persist after Tunisia pipped them by a solitary goal in their Cairo backyard. Senegal edged Tunisia on goal difference to top the group with 6 points. Botswana is above bottom-placed Egypt on account of goal difference. Finally, Nations Cup hosts Morocco played to a scoreless draw against visitors Qatar in a friendly match in Casablanca. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says it is committing $50 million to help combat the growing Ebola outbreak in West Africa. The Seattle-based foundation says it will immediately give funds to the United Nations and international aid agencies to purchase badly needed supplies and support emergency operations in affected countries. Also Tuesday, the United Nations allocated $3.8 million for the UN Humanitarian Air Service to help move aid, supplies, equipment, and personnel in Ebola-struck countries. South African runner star Oscar Pistorius is set to hear the verdict in his murder trial as the proceedings resume in Pretoria today, Thursday. Judge Thokozile Masipa is expected to recount the evidence and testimony presented by nearly 40 witnesses before handing down her ruling in a process that could stretch for hours and extend into Friday. And that is it for this Thursday, September 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a very peaceful and healthy Thursday.
For the latest news on the political crisis in Ivory Coast, VOA Abidjan listeners can tune to FM 99.0, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The latest on Ivory Coast in French and English on FM 99.0 in Abidjan.
VOA Africa. voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information. voaafrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.